ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
I recognize a lot of you. Nice to see you all here. And always good to find excuses to meet and talk about Krishna. And I like the topic. And in the introduction, Ananda, you said the matchless gift of a spiritual life. I guess there's always the possibility of then, of course, not having a spiritual life. And there's a lot said in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the importance of distinguishing between the two. In fact, even in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about distinguishing between what's temporary and what's eternal. He says that wise people are ones who are able to identify that which is permanent and then distinguish it from that which is ephemeral. And then he also describes in the Gita about how we're part of the eternal energy. In the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says that we're actually indestructible, imperishable, eternal. Whereas the material energy is constantly changing, we remain the same. And that creates a dichotomy. And also it's frustrating for someone whose nature is to be permanent, imperishable, and eternal, to deal with energy that's falling apart and always diminishing. And it is a gift to find out how to come in contact with the spiritual energy that is what actually satisfies us. So that's a consistent theme in the Bhagavad Gita. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who taught the Bhagavad Gita in very practical ways to one of his students, he gave an analogy that there was once a poor man and he didn't have any prospect in life. Therefore, he felt very downtrodden. And then he met an astrologer. And the astrologer looked at his chart and told him that you're not actually poor. You've made a mistake. He said, actually, your father is very wealthy. He was wealthy, he died. And this man had been estranged from his family, but he said, did the astrologer, that your father left you his entire inheritance, treasury. And then he told him, not only did he leave it to you, I know where it is. And I can tell you exactly where it is, and I can tell you how to dig for it. It's in your yard, actually. It's there the whole time. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who, for those of you who don't know, he was famous for walking all over India, especially South India. He went from town to town, barefoot. He was a renunciate. And he taught everybody the simple principles of spiritual life everywhere he went. So he went on with the analogy and he told that there's a proper way to dig up the treasure. And he compared that meeting the astrologer to coming in contact with the Vedic literature, which actually describes the difference between material and spiritual energy, and also the process to stay in touch with it constantly. And regarding inheritances, there's another statement in the Bhagavatam, and it's about inheriting the spiritual world. That's actually what we stand to inherit. So it's a verse in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And In fact, it was spoken by Brahma. He was the first to receive knowledge from Krishna in our line of teachers at the beginning of creation. And when he gave his wisdom through a series of prayers, he said, Tate anukampam susimikshamanu bunjane evatma kritam vipakam hridvagapapur vir vidadam namaste jiveta yo mukti pade sadayabhak. He said that when a person comes to realize that he's dependent on the mercy of the Supreme and patiently waits for that to come to him and goes on living life despite, in a steady way, expecting that and not wavering, despite the fact that there are obstacles in life and distractions. Have you found ever there are obstacles or distractions? One person? Well, thank you. So he said that if one remains patient amidst those obstacles and considers that whatever reversals of fortune come, those are actually, first of all, they were caused by myself. I don't blame anybody else. And then the second thing is, he considers them to be purification. And then he goes on to say, if someone's able to live like that throughout their life, with that attitude, then they become the inheritor of the spiritual world. So there are great masters of yoga called acharyas who have commented on this verse. And one of them's name is Sridhar Swami. And he said, in response to this verse, because it has an important phrase in it, which is called Daya Bak, and that means to inherit something. So then he poses the question, what is the duty, in fact he says it, what is the only duty of the son of a very wealthy man? And then he answers it, and that's to stay alive. Because by staying alive, then eventually you'll inherit the wealth of the father. And so Sridhar Swami goes on to say that the duty of the sincere yoga practitioner is to somehow or other stay alive in spiritual life, which takes some inventiveness because of the way in which we go through the various phases in our life. The primary means and the real gift, and I like the term matchless gift, because when my spiritual master came to America and landed in New York, he actually had no place to stay. But then after meeting some people who helped him after many, many months, they found a storefront that had been a gift shop, and the name of it was Matchless Gifts. And he kept the name on the storefront because it was appropriate for what he was offering. And it was a simple thing that he offered. Didn't have unlimited funds to build a theme park or anything like that. But he just went down to the local park and he chanted. And then he'd come back and he'd give open classes on the Bhagavad Gita. So this was the matchless gift. How so? Because the spiritual sound is actually the real gift, the matchless gift. It miraculously transforms us. And the science taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has everything to do with how we allow various sounds to come into our life. The Sri Upanishad says, anyad evahura sambhavad, anyad ahura sambhavad. That one result, we obtain one result by staying in touch with material sound and a different result from connecting with spiritual sound. And those sound vibrations are what move us in various directions. So when he came to the park that's still there, and the longest standing member of the movement that he started is still there standing in that park. And that's the tree that he sat underneath. And then because of the spiritual sound vibration in the park and back at the storefront, just a few people were coming, something grew, and it grew into an international society that gave people facility everywhere to stay in contact with spiritual sound vibration. And this sound, there are many analogies about sound and how it affects us. But one that I like is about a man who found a raccoon, a wild raccoon. It was a little wounded, so he took it in and he nurtured it back. It hurt its foot. Foot healed, and the raccoon became tame because he liked living with the man. He was feeding him, so it became a tame raccoon. And after 2 years, one night he was sitting on the porch with his raccoon, and there was another raccoon off in the wild, and it made some raccoon sounds. And this supposedly tame raccoon ran off into the woods and never came back. And as we were reading on the way over here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sound vibration we read, the Omkar, resides within the heart. And it, just like it resides there, like the sound of a bell. The vibrations are there, but there's all, and the vibration we connect with externally resonates with whatever's there, and it calls us in different directions. So because of various sounds that I've taken in over many, many lifetimes that are also there, when I hear there, those parallel sounds in the environment, they resonate with what's inside me and they move me in a certain direction. So the science of hearing spiritual sound, it seems almost too simple. But that's how simple yet profound the process of bhakti is. And it's knowing how to connect to the spiritual world through sound. In fact, the Vedas say, anavriti shabdhat. Everything's possible by connecting with spiritual sound. In fact, there's a way in which the whole world moves by sound, by mantra. And you just have to pick the right mantras. And if you keep in touch with the right mantra, then the great gift that is already there, buried, it's already there within the heart. It becomes revealed. That's another analogy, that the personified Vedas, if you can imagine, the Vedas, which are the great books of knowledge, but they're personified. If you could sit with one of them for a while, and you actually can by reading these books, but they say that, again, they give the analogy of a poor man. They say, once there was a poor man loitering in the street, and then he met another person who struck up a conversation with him, and the poor man was bemoaning the fact that he was suffering so much. And the other one brought his attention to something hanging around his neck. He asked the poor man, what's that hanging around your neck? And he said, oh, I'd forgotten. And then he looked carefully. It was a great jewel that had been given to him, but he forgot it was there. So the sound vibration reminds us of the gift that's already there. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized that it's not something to be obtained from an external source. It's already there. It resides within the heart. We don't become something. We already are something, but we uncover it and discover what it is. That's the matchless gift. So there are various kinds of vibration And one can study them, the science of sound vibration. And if you don't like the way your life's going or the way your mind works, then you have to change the subject. Because if you don't like what you're being subjected to, you're listening to the wrong channel. And you can change it. Isn't it? Is it possible to change a channel? Say yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And so bhakti yogis deliberately tune in to the spiritual vibration. And that's what one of the great teachers of bhakti, Rupa Goswami, says in this concise book about the practice of yoga, that the essence of all advice is to organize your life in such a way that you can stay in touch with the higher vibration. And if you do that, then you'll see that the matchless gift is there. It's been there all the time. And it becomes revealed day by day, minute by minute, as one stays in touch with spiritual sound. What do you think? Which part? Who said true?
Okay. That was actually, I was going to ask, now's a good time. Is that the origin of all creation, sound?
Yes. There's a description in the Bhagavatam about how sound is the source of creation. And it has the creative force. In fact, Prabhupada describes in one purport how if you want to create anything, it begins with sound. For instance, if you want to make a skyscraper, he says, it begins with sound. You start talking about it. And by the words that you say, you start accumulating the labor and the materials. They're already available. They're already there. They don't manifest themselves from nothing, but they already exist. But you assemble them by making mantras. You say, I want to build a building. It should be so high, it's so many floors, it should look like this. These are sound vibrations that begin to assemble. And you'll notice in the Bhagavatam that at the beginning of the creation, the description of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Brahma is manifesting everything from mantras. And mantras are compared sometimes to seeds. And from a seed, with a little water and some air and light and soil, then the plant manifests. So Brahma uses mantras to manifest all the different varieties in the universe. He creates like that. What other reflections do you have? Yes?
You said something to the effect of that it's frustrating to understand your permanence, but see the fleeing way of this physical world. And I was thinking that I feel like it's more frustrating the other way around. If you are a product of the fleeting world and you don't understand your permanence, I would think that that would be a position of more suffering.
If you're part of the fleeting world, but you don't understand.
Yeah, you don't understand your permanence.
Yeah, that's true. At the same time, everyone has an inkling, although it may not be expressly stated that I realize that I'm permanent and the world around me is temporary. There's a kind of yearning for what we call happily ever after. Have you ever heard that in a story? I always wondered about that as a kid when they said, and they lived happily ever after. I went to bed thinking like, how so? I mean, how does that work?
They really set us up to be unhappy.
Yeah, and there's a sense that everyone has. In fact, I have a photograph I took with my iPhone when I was on a walk, and it's of in my neighborhood. I go a few blocks down, there's a park nearby where I live, and on the sidewalk, someone with an indelible pen made a big heart, and then inside the heart it says M plus M, and then next to the heart it says forever. And I use that in a seminar PowerPoint that I show to start with, talking about this principle that pervades the world. There's a sense of HEA, happily ever after, that everyone has. Whether they realize it or not, it's the yearning of the soul. In fact, that's a natural, there's a natural inclination. So if you're walking in the desert and suddenly you find a perfectly formed gold coin just sitting there, you might then think, this is out of place. Where did it come from? So similarly, if you're in a world that's impermanent, and then you realize that you have desire for permanence, as expressed through happily ever after and many other ways it manifests, then it would lead logically to ask the question, where does that come from? You don't see it in the desert. There's no obvious place where a gold coin would come from. It must have come from somewhere else. And so, in fact, the frustration that one feels is a sign. It's actually a helpful thing to indicate that there's something more to look for. Because why would there be frustration unless there was an incompatibility between myself and the nature I'm interacting with? And my point is that it's naturally there within everyone to struggle with that. And getting knowledge means to clarify why that's happening and be clear about the difference between the energies. And Krishna, in the Gita, goes to some lengths to describe the difference. He first names the lower energies: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. So these are gross and subtle energies. But he says that these are binna, they're separated energies. And he describes them as lower energy. And then he says above that, there's the higher energy of the Atma. The Atma is not part of the world, and it's categorically different from the elements that he's named. And he describes how the Atma can't be satisfied by interacting with the lower nature. And so yoga gives us a taste at first, and then we're able to actually enter into that. Even as we're in this energy, we're able to stay constantly in touch with the higher energy through the process of yoga. And in the bhakti process, that's primarily done through the sound vibration, because the sound is so powerful. In fact, it's the primary, according to the Vedas, that's the most prominent sense for humans. And if you take a look at your ears, I mean, you can't see them really, but you can feel, check if they're still there. And you can look at somebody else's, but they're actually kind of peculiar if you look at them for a little while. They're shaped like little satellite dishes. They have all kinds of channels and everything. And they're very well designed. They can sound from the outside world. So they're meant to allow us to take in sound. And in fact, the description in the Bhagavatam is that one takes in the sound and it enters within the heart. In my neighborhood, I catch a lot of lessons from my neighborhood. So I made a little PowerPoint about bhakti lessons from my neighborhood. And another one that I came across when I was walking, I live near not so far from the San Francisco Bay, but far enough so that it's interesting that all the storm drains in my neighborhood have a little placard on them that say, "No dumping drains to bay." And it has a picture of a fish. Because everyone knows that, well, not everyone, obviously, that's why they have the placards. But when you pour toxics down the drain, it ends up in the bay. It goes a long way. Water seeks its own level. So when I saw that, I was thinking of this principle that whatever goes into the ear, it ends up going to the bay of the heart, and it resides there. And the heart is known as the driver. The body is known as the chariot. And the state of our heart will determine the direction that we go. So I was considering putting a couple placards up here saying, no dumping drains to bay. So you have to be aware of the fact that whatever goes in stays in. In fact, because of the culture I grew up in, I can still sing you many jingles from commercials that I heard when I was young. They're still in there. The vibration is very powerful. It comes in seed form. So the investment of hearing is transformative, especially if you can verify that it's spiritual sound. And then someone might ask, well, what do you mean by spiritual sound, and how do you know that it's, we say, it comes from an authorized source. It has potency that way. And one example of this is that, and there's a term, effective speech. So there's a context in which certain kinds of sound vibration or speech in this world is especially powerful and acts when it's spoken. As an example, in a courtroom, let's just imagine a courtroom, and you'll say the judge is there and she's sitting behind the what they call the bench, and she has a robe on and court is in session. There are bailiffs there, everything you'd imagine, so you can verify from everything you can see that it's a real courtroom and the court is in session. And then when the defendant comes in and the sentencing takes place, and the judge then pronounces sentencing, what does the judge say? What's the sentence? Okay, so this person was being held without bail, but now the judge has received the verdict from the jury, and in this authorized setting, she says, this person is not guilty and is free to go. And then she hits the, what is it called?
Gavel.
The gavel on this little, I don't know what the other part's called. Look it up quick. She hits her gavel, and she says, not guilty, free to go, and hits the gavel. And then, is that person free to go? Absolutely. Why? Because she said it. She said he's free to go. Now, what if she was hanging out by the 7-Eleven after hours? Same judge. No robe. Waiting for her husband to bring a Slurpee out. And, you know, someone walked by her and bumped into her, and she said, you know, you should go to jail. Now, she's the same judge. Does the guy go to jail? The context has to be there, and the person has to be authorized. And there's a way in which the sound vibration is passed down through authorized channels. And when one takes it like that, then it becomes immediately effective. What other reflections? Anything else? Yeah.
At one point, and that's really helpful because recently I was indulging in a little bit of like smutty television.
Yeah.
Which I haven't really done in a while, and it really negatively affected me. I was feeling a lot of anger and agitation for a few days, and I didn't really understand why. I stopped it and I felt better, but now that makes more sense to me.
And you can extend that out to the world and say, why does the world seem to be in such an agitated state? Everybody seems to be disturbed. And the reason is the sound vibration is wrong. If somebody watches a 24-hour news cycle just for 2 days, they'll feel a lot of anxiety because they're hearing a lot of things they can't do anything about. In fact, there's only so much bad news that one person can handle. We're not meant to take in so much, all these vibrations. And then especially the kinds of sounds that put us in anxiety are those that remind us that there are horrible things happening, but they're beyond our circle of influence, nothing we can do about it. And it disturbs the mind in various ways. So becoming focused on those things that actually we have something to do with it, that are within our circle of influence, that are transformative, brings a sense of peacefulness. Any other thoughts? It just means anything you heard that stuck. Yes?
I was appreciating this point about how sound, it's sticky. Like, even like you hear commercial jingles and then they're still there, like I still have songs memorized. vibrations.
Yeah, so it's like mango sap. If you get mango sap in your hair, it's really difficult to get out. There's a lot of things that are difficult to get out, and the sound can be sticky like that also. But there is a science of getting things out. In fact, some people are really expert. They know how, if you spill something on your rug, you have to call them up and say, what do I do now? Say, get some club soda, put a little baking powder in it. It'll come right out. There are solutions. Solutions actually mean it can actually dissolve something. And so the Maha Mantra, this Hare Krishna chant, it's a solvent. It's a universal solvent. It can actually dissolve a lot of those sticky sounds that get caught in the ethereal body and dissolves them, and then you can wash them right out. And so the regular practice of fortifying oneself with the spiritual sound is important, because there are more sounds coming in all the time from the environment. The power of hearing, I was going to mention that, because I had a revelation once when I was out for a hike, and I was in this forest, again near where I live in San Francisco, and it's a redwood forest, and there's a stream that comes through it, and I was with two friends that were from Hungary. I was taking them around, showing them the different sites in San Francisco, and then when we got into the forest, we saw a ranger, and he had waders on, those long boots. He was going out into the stream, and the long tongs, of which he was pulling little pieces of trash out of the out of the stream. And so I went over to chat with the ranger, because you can learn a lot from a ranger. And so I went to talk to the ranger. I said, so what are you doing? And he said, I'm taking micro trash out. I like that term, micro trash. And I said, so what's micro trash and why are you taking it out? And he said, well, there's people around and it's an industrial world, and little pieces of gum wrapper get it out in the environment. They go right into the stream. Even some people throw coins in. And he said, it disturbs the fish. I said, what fish and how does it disturb them? And he said, there's this kind of salmon that's really important to the ecosystem. It's called the coho salmon. And he said, the salmon have an acute sense of smell, and they can triangulate through their smelling power, and they can find their way. I said, find their way where? And he said, well, they grow up in this freshwater stream, and when they reach a certain age, their body starts to change, and they head downstream, and they swim all the way down to the ocean. And biologists have tracked some of them that go for 2,000 miles in the ocean. And then after a couple of years, they find their way back to the original stream. And then they swim upstream. And they go all the way back to the place they were born. And they mate there. And after they produce offspring, then they dwindle and they die. And I was thinking about how powerful their sense of smell is, and then relating it to the way in which the Vedas talk about our acute sense of hearing. And how a human being, through the power of hearing, can find his or her way back to the spiritual world. If you hear that particular sound that comes from the realm beyond the closed system of the material universe, then just like that fish can find its way thousands of miles and then swim upstream and find the exact place, we can find our home. It's a homing device, hearing. It's so acute and powerful. So that's why bhakti is so much dependent on the process of hearing and refining the sound vibration that one has in one's life. Yes?
What's the origination of sound?
Originally it comes from the spiritual world. But when it comes into the material world, there's a whole way in which everything becomes transformed when it touches the material energy. And the reason it becomes transformed is because of contaminated consciousness. And contaminated consciousness is a big topic, but it has to do with spiritual living entity misusing free will and then entrapping himself in a lower energy by being selfish. And so the sound vibration, everything comes from the spiritual world. Its origin is there. But then it becomes transformed when it comes in contact with contaminated consciousness. So those things that actually cause happiness or pleasure in the spiritual world, when they come into the spiritual energy and they become transformed by the lower energies of the material world, then they become the source of distress. It's called hladatapatraya. It means that that which was originally pleasure-producing then produces misery here in the material world. We get the opposite result. So the vibration of the mantra that comes from the spiritual world, when it's taken through the proper channel, when it comes through pure hearts of those, especially those practitioners who have no motive, then it has a special potency. So we can chant some more. Right?
Yes, please.
Because nobody here could stop us, probably. Shall we? How are we for time? Okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Kai Gaura Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Kai Gaura Hari Bol. Nandamurai Harmonium. For the cartel players. For Hare Krishna singers. For everybody in Denver. Go Premanande. Nikai Gaura Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Nikai Gaura Hari Bol. Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari
So, does anybody have any questions? Questions are harder than reflections, right? Sean?
Just a small comment. It's so ecstatic when science matches what the Vedas say, and there's this beautiful science called cymatics. You can watch sound being activated through sand or sugar. You can create thousands and millions of different shapes, and it's really, really wonderful. And like you can put like a violin string, it affects the sand, makes a different pattern. It's an unlimited.
We're going to have to do that in a kirtan someday. Yeah. Maybe put it on top of the harmonium.
Yeah, it's a good reminder how our reality is being shaped by sound, yeah. Any other things? Yes?
I was just going to comment, I almost feel like selfish in a way, I thought, when I come to do kirtan, because I feel like it's always giving to me. I'm not sure what it is that I'm giving back, but it's like this relationship where I can just keep coming, like, taking the nectar like a little hummingbird. It's like, come and get this nectar, and then yeah. go on my way, come back for more when I'm tired, and I don't know, it just really sustains me. I don't know if it goes both ways, but it makes me happy.
Well, Prabhupada used to say, when you do the kirtan, the vibration goes around the earth 8 times. He wrote that in one of his purports. And so, you know, it's... And Haridas Thakur said a similar thing. He said the loud chanting of Krishna's names benefits all living entities. There are living entities that are invisible to our eyes, but just by hearing the vibration, they're getting the highest benefit. What to speak of the way in which it transforms the person who's chanting, and then with the way they interact with the world is different. The process of bhakti, the benefits are described. I mean, there are multiple benefits, but two of the primary ones that come right away from bhakti are described in the first canto of the Bhagavatam. It says, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Ashuvairagyam Gyanam Chayara Haitukam. That is, by practicing bhakti, then one naturally gets knowledge and detachment from the world. And knowledge is defined as the ability to see the difference between matter and spirit. And detachment is a different perspective that allows you to move through the world without becoming entangled. And those two things come as concomitants, and they're helping factors. And that goes out into the way that you interact with people in the world as well. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the distribution of the holy names is especially important in this age. When we're in California, in fact, it's tonight, I think, they're having what we call Kirtan Oasis. We set up there's a plaza right near Stanford University in Palo Alto. And we put up several booths, and we have lights, a light show, and we have a low stage area where we do kirtan outside. And actually, we used to go there regularly, but we have to share the area. Sometimes there are street musicians there that had amplifiers and things like that. And then we looked on the website for the city, and it said that there is a permit to be had so you could use the plaza for the night. So we went down to City Hall. We told them we'd like to have a permit. And they said, we don't give permits. They said, oh, yeah, but yes, you do. They said, oh, so we do. No one had ever asked. So we got a permit. We get permits regularly when we go there and set up a mini festival. And then we noticed that the people who are coming down for nightlife in Palo Alto then get caught by the sound vibration. And I enjoy watching people's countenances change when they see it. And they're mystified by the sound. They're not really sure what it is, but they can't give it up. It's a very exotic sound. It's hard to tell why it's so exotic. And then if you put in some dancing too, people really get enamored of that because the dancing seems so causeless. And just joyful and things like that. And those kinds of ways in which to broadcast the name and bring it to people, that was Lord Chaitanya's mission. He said, take it out to people in the streets and in the public and make it available so that people can hear it and they'll be transformed by it. So it's nice work if you can get it. And it works everywhere. Everywhere in the world, we notice that you can go to Europe and Asia, and everywhere where we set up to do chanting the holy names, people become similarly attracted. And it doesn't matter what culture people are from, when they come in contact with the process of bhakti, they even transcend the culture, for the most part. And parallel with what Chaitanya said, that it's a natural tendency that's already there within every soul. It just comes out when it's in contact with the higher vibration. So it's natural.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Nice studio. Whose studio is this? Okay. Well, thanks for coming out, everybody. It was nice being with you tonight. Nacheri Armarman. Nacheri Armarman. Nacheri Armarman. Nacheri Armarman. Hey! Nacheri Armarman. Nacheri Armarman. Nacheri Armarman. Nacheri Armarman.